Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, once again, we find ourselves half talking about retirements and injuries and half talking about amazing tennis. It seems to have been the story of the week so far, but I don't think I can ever remember Catherine Whittaker. In fact, I certainly can't remember because it's never happened in the history of the WTA finals that four players have either retired or withdrawn from the events before the final day. I mean, and in fact, in the whole tournament, it's this time it was Belinda Bencic who started to feel an injury on the upper left part of her hamstring. We weren't sure whether it was cramp or whether it was an injury, but she withdrew at 4-1 down in the third set. And what was a really fun first set ends up being a somber, deflated occasion, and we all needed cheering up. How's your day been?
Oh, somber and deflated.
What's happened with yours?
Misery loves company. Found out about a split second before throwing live to the match, to the second semi-final in Paris, that Rafael Nadal had withdrawn.
Yeah.
With an abdominal injury he sustained this morning in practice. I mean, a genuine shock. I found out when the viewers did.
Yeah, well, I saw you. You were having a chat with Sam Smith, weren't you? And she was interviewing Goran Ivanišević after Novak Djokovic had just beaten Dimitrov in what looked like a really good match, certainly for a set. It was amazing for a set, wasn't it? And Goran was quite candid about how excited he was about Novak facing Nadal. You know, he actually seemed to want that match. That would have been minutes before you ended up sort of supposedly bringing Nadal onto the court on Prime Video, wouldn't it?
Yes. I mean, there was a short delay of blissful ignorance for everyone involved. And then, we stopped building up to Nadal Shapovalov, which I really think would have been great. I do. I think Shapovalov was ready for that. I heard in my ear withdrawal go to Sam. But I wasn't really sure. Sam Smith's obviously on the ground in Paris. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to Sam for. So I said, "Oh, Sam, breaking news. What have you got for us? Thrill us, Sam." And it was not any kind of thrill.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it was just so deflating.
And with the most perfect timing, somebody who isn't here today, Matt Roberts, a message has just popped up on my screen saying, "God, today's been awful." And Matt is at was at Fulham today, watching his beloved Fulham FC lose 3-0 at home to Hull. So he's had a terrible time. Hello, Matt. You're not here.
That is bad, isn't it?
Cheer
up. Is it the universe's payback for his night at the Medeski?
Well,
don't know. Just speculating.
Could be. What was that, 4-1? Oh dear. I shouldn't bring that up.
3-0 at half time.
Oh dear. 3-0 after about 20 minutes, isn't it? Anyway, so the good bits of the day. It's not all bad news, folks. But look, the fact is that Elena Svitolina won through to the final of the WTA finals after a first set that she was struggling against Bencic. And then Bencic had this problem, couldn't move properly. was really just trying to go for winners or drop shot winners because of an inability to properly move, and then pulled the cord at 1-4 down in the third set. So that puts Svitolina through. Svitolina has now won 10 successive matches at the WTA finals, and it's quite a remarkable stat. She lost her first two and she's won the next 10. So she's got a chance to defend her title and win what would be $4.7 million because she's undefeated. And she now faces Ash Barty in the final. Now that, let's all cheer up, everybody, because that was an amazing match. This was Karolina Pliskova coming out and taking up things where she left off against Simona Halep and absolutely teeing off. She was causing Barty all sorts of problems. Barty was playing well. I thought Barty was playing pretty well, but she was getting overpowered. And so that made the turnaround all the more magnificent. I think the turnaround in that match was one of the most uplifting matches and performances of the year because of what Barty did to get back into it. First of all, she was getting pressure at the start of the second set, and she just about held onto a serve from love 40 down. 1-1, I think it was, love 40. And she managed to hold onto a serve to lead 2-1. And she brought on Craig Tizer, her coach. And I think it was the first time I'd been on a match with him coming on this week. He'd been on in the early rounds, but not the last two. And he was just giving her a few points. There's nothing too major, just about trying to sort of mix up the serve. You know, it was like kick one, then hit one, slide it out, and then, you know, it was all this sort of variety that he wanted from her. And whatever little message was there, something clicked for her, because I don't think Pliskova started playing much worse, but Barty's dexterity, all-court ability, imagination, and just she became the worst nightmare for Pliskova. She was looping balls up high. She was hitting drop shots, she was hitting volleys, she was hitting big forehands, sliced, knifed backhand. She hit a slice winner down the line. She hit two fantastic lobs, one with topspin off her back foot on the baseline, another one sort of kind of like a push lob as she's running full pelt forward, and she still managed to control the lob over the head. And it was, honestly, if that was a Federer playing that sort of performance, you know, it'd be one of those that you want to have the maximum audience for, because I don't think there's anybody else in women's tennis that would have produced a performance like that. It had everything. It had every shot you can imagine. And it was just so nice to see a world number one showing why she's the world number one in the final tournament of the year. I mean, she's got the Fed Cup to come, but she's into the final, and it was just majestic. It was really uplifting to see, and she now faces Svitolina tomorrow.
Just googling highlights of that match because I missed it, and it sounds great.
Have you got FOMO?
Yeah, a little bit, sort of retrospective FOMO. I think
what,
I was
that?
Leading
fear
into
of missing out,
a bleak Rafael Nadal press conference while you were commentating on what sounds like the best match of the week.
Yeah.
Hey, do you want some quirky head-to-head news that you might already be aware of?
Go on.
Alina Svitolina and Ash Barty have a head-to-head of 5-0 in Svitolina's favour.
Yes, I was aware of that.
That is weird.
It is surprising, isn't it? What I would say is, if you look at that head-to-head, all five matches come before Miami this year. The most recent one was in Indian Wells this year, and it was three very close sets. I think she won 6-4 in the third, did Svitolina, but I think they haven't played each other since Barty became Barty, is the way I would put it.
I like the way you've put it.
Yeah. However, that doesn't mean to say it won't have a fact and an impact, because, I mean, look, she was still the same kind of player. It is really interesting that Barty hasn't managed to figure out how to beat Svitolina so far, because she's a better competitor and a better winner now, but she still had all of those shots back then. But, you know, in the research for this match, I watched a video on the WTA website. They've got a series of videos called My Story on the YouTube channel of the WTA. And it's really interesting to sort of get a background into some of these players who I know, you know, obviously know a fair bit about, but I don't know I don't know their full backstory. And this 10-minute video of Ash Barty really delving in to why she stepped away from the sport, and explaining that she said, you know, where we live and being that I'm so close to my family, etc., when I won Wimbledon Juniors in 2011, she says, I just wasn't ready for that. It came too soon for me. When I went on my first proper overseas trip to Europe for 6 or 7 weeks, she says, I cried every night and I was calling home every night and saying, I just want to come home. And, you know, they spoke to her first ever coach. She turned up at this local tennis club when she was 5 years old, and she'd said, oh, you know, I want to play tennis. And he said, come back when you're seven, because I don't coach them till they're seven. But she says, oh, please. And he just let her have a little go. And she was so good, he let her join, even though she was underage. But he said, and he's kept in touch with the family ever since. He was there being interviewed with her dad, Rob, and the coach, I think his name was Jim Joyce. He said, if she'd have carried on one more year on the tour, she wouldn't be doing this now. He said, unless she'd stepped away from the sport, there's no way she'd have been able to come back because of the damage it would have done. Very interesting.
In terms of her love for the sport would have been broken beyond repair.
I think more
as
just
in she wouldn't have wanted to come back.
She couldn't. It would have done. There would have been too much collateral damage mentally and psychologically. She'd have been. She stepped away from the sport because she couldn't really deal with the tour. She wasn't ready for the tour. And he said if she'd have spent another year on it, then he couldn't imagine that she'd have been able to put the damage behind her as she was able to. She said, what I did by going to play cricket for a year or two is I was still able to have this kind of one-on-one by being a batsman, but I was part of a team. It wasn't all on me. And if you think about it, whenever you hear Barty talk these days, she talks about we. She talks about her team, Craig Tizer and her trainer, etc. We had a good result, or we played really well, or it's gone really well for us. And she talks in those terms. And I think that is a calculated way of just sort of having an outlook that she feels happy with, it seems to me. And I just find her whole story, we've talked about it on and off throughout the year, but it's so uplifting. And to see her ending the year like this, getting to the final and having Fed Cup on the horizon in Australia, which she talks about in this video, she's so passionate about playing for Australia. That is going to be an amazing occasion next week.
It certainly is. Yeah, it's really whetting my appetite for that. I'm just making a little mental note of going to watch that YouTube video.
It's so good.
List of things David Law has told me I should watch today. Because we all know that story, and it's such a great story of her leaving tennis. I mean, difficult to hear in some respects. It's only a great story because it's ended so positively. You know, there's another world in which it's a horrible story, I suppose, but thank goodness it's not. But she doesn't like telling it. She really doesn't like telling it, and I really, really get that. She's not a dwelling on the past kind of a person. She's not a sentimental kind of a person. You know, it is what it is, and let's get on with business. So I get why she doesn't like telling it, but I also get why we all want to hear it. So I'm glad there's kind of a definitive telling of it.
That's it.
Out there.
That's
if,
what
if
it
that
is.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that's what it felt like to me, because I knew snippets of the story, but this really put me in the picture from her from her mouth, really. And it really struck me because a couple of days ago, I think it was Tennis Australia who sent out a press release announcing a new campaign that she was going to front, and it was all about keeping young players, particularly young female players, in the sport by, when they pick it up, when they pick up the sport, not feeling alone, not feeling pressured by societal expectations, not feeling pressured by peers, but playing for yourself, playing for the love of the sport. And she's fronting this campaign, and it's great to see somebody who's had a tough experience like that, who's going to be able to to direct things in a way that might have helped her and now might help others.
And I believe, I'm sure it's the case in all countries, but I've had conversations with Australians involved in Australian tennis and in other sports as well about the fact that they really feel in Australia that tennis loses out to team sports, that kids are so sporty in Australia. They'll play lots of different sports. Any young tennis player in Australia is probably also on a cricket team, also on an Aussie rules team, also on a netball team. And there comes a point where they have to make a choice. And often, for completely understandable and pretty obvious reasons, tennis will lose out to team sports. Because as a kid, unless you're unashamedly have that raw, competitive, animalistic, Rafael Nadal-esque desire to ruthlessly win everything, the lure of team competition and being with your mates and everything being fun, competitive but also fun and all the rest of it, you know, that's obviously appealing to a kid. So I'm not saying that doesn't happen elsewhere, but I think in Australia, where kids are so sporty and they have all these options at their disposal, I can see the issue. Mm. Choose tennis, kids.
Yeah, well, she did, I just love watching her play and love her story. And she now faces Vasilina tomorrow. What do you feel now that Bencic, your pick, is out? Sorry, who do you think's going to win?
Well, I definitely would have said Barty until I saw that head to head. But then you've talked me out of the significance of that head to head. I think Barty.
Okay.
There we go. I've talked myself around in a perfect circle. I think Ash Barty.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, so I do too. I mean, I've got.
Did you pick Barty? Did you pick Barty before the tournament?
I did. At the outset, yeah.
Yeah.
I picked Barty. David Law picked Barty to win the title.
Matt Roberts. The video function on FaceTime at the moment because I can see David's face and it's annoying.
Matt Roberts picked Svitolina, so it's a head-to-head here on the Tennis Podcast. Incidentally, the women's final the doubles final is Tamara Babos and Kiki Mladenovic. Babos going for three in a row in the WTA finals, are playing against Shea Souay and Barbora Strizova. What a fantastic doubles final that is in prospect.
That's brilliant.
Do you know
anything involving Shea Souay?
Yeah,
brilliant.
I mean, Shea and Strizova. I mean, can you just imagine? But I was talking in commentary with Joe Jury about the prize money, that those semifinals, single semifinals today, literally had $1.1 million on them each. Just those matches. So, you know, if Bencic had managed
to
just
put one foot in front of the other.
I don't know. It's incredible the way it ratchets up like that. And when we went to a commercial break, Joe said to me, what did they get for the doubles? I got to the final of the doubles in 84. And so I had a look back at what they got in the doubles back then. She would have shared $23,000 with her partner for getting to the final. These days, the defeated finalist in the doubles tomorrow will receive $525,000 between them, and the champions will get $1 million. So it's pretty massive this tomorrow. this is the richest.
Too late to enter.
I think you've just maybe
they seem to be needing a lot of alternates. I reckon I could make some phone calls.
Yeah, well, if you can get that Lemanga forehand going, maybe you'll have a chance of winning a point or two. Anyway, so whilst all that was going on, so the final tomorrow is the women's final, doubles final is at 4:30 p.m. local time, which is in the morning here, UK time. And then it's 11:30 UK time for Barty against Svitolina tomorrow. That's on BT Sport. And it's all going to be pretty emotional because it'll be our final ever broadcast of tennis on BT Sport before we hand over the baton to you, Catherine, on Amazon Prime Video.
Do you know if a Totes Emotion video montage has been prepared?
I dare say.
Because they They kick me right in the guts, they yes. do.
Well, it's been really good fun, I have to say, the last 6.5 years. So one more go at it. I'm commentating, so I can't wait. It's going to be great fun.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Ooh.
Now, meanwhile, you did have one match to witness today, which was Grigor Dimitrov in action against Novak Djokovic. Yeah. And it was pretty close for a while, wasn't it?
It really was. Yes, it was very, very close throughout the first set. Really high level from both of them, toe to toe. Really good serving. No break points for either, I don't think. Certainly no break points for Djokovic. He didn't face any today. And that was something that Goran Ivanišević was delighted with after the match. He's moulding Djokovic in his image, is Goran, and couldn't be more pleased about it. We got to an inevitable feeling first set tiebreak, and Dimitrov was really on it. He looked so in the zone, you know, hugging the baseline, just looking so confident and in the moment. Didn't look like his mind was running away from him until... until he gets involved in a pretty prolonged rally, hits what was so nearly a win. I mean, I could be describing so many significant points involving Djokovic over the years, but Dimitrov is on top throughout most of the rally. Djokovic is scrambling away at the baseline. Dimitrov hits what would have been a winner against anybody else. Djokovic scrambles it back, lofts it in the air. Dimitrov's looming at the net, looking threatening, only has to put away a drive volley and hammers it into the tram lines. And at that moment, you know the set is gone.
Yeah.
Or, it was
I saw
Andy
that
Roddick
rally.
Forehand volley, yeah. Wimbledon final-esque.
But, you know, whilst I saw that rally, and you're right, you're thinking, come on, Grigor, just put it away, man. You're playing that well. But that's what Djokovic does to you, isn't it?
Yep.
Isn't it? He shrinks the court and he makes you feel like you've got to swipe at the ball, maybe in with more on it, because the bloke's going to get there.
Yeah, it felt to me like he was goading Grigor Dimitrov for the whole match, really, goading him to miss. And Dimitrov hung tough pretty well. I love this. I love that he suddenly twigged, hey, I'm a better athlete than pretty much anyone, even the really great athletes. I love that he suddenly, well, maybe it's not sudden, but it seems to me like he's twigged that that's not only a benefit in itself, but a benefit he can double down on because it can give him confidence in a match. Hey, don't worry, make it physical, make it long. You can hang with this. And he was sticking longer than most would in the rallies. It was a 35-shot rally on set point. And my goodness me, he did well. It was, again, how many points matches could I be describing here? But it was a rally that Djokovic felt like Djokovic had no right to win until he did. And it was mesmerising.
And by the end of
they were both absolutely puffing for air, both of them.
I've never seen Dimitrov look like that before at the end of a rally. He looked like he was going to pass out, you know.
Djokovic has a dreadful lurgy. I mean, he really sounds ropey. And I wondered whether, I mean, as sublime as he was yesterday against Tsitsipas, it was obviously no kind of physical test whatsoever, 58 minutes. I really thought if Dimitrov could make it really physical today, he stood a chance just because of how depleted Djokovic must be physically. But Djokovic answered those questions.
Now,
and then some.
Last night, we obviously didn't cover the last two matches last night. Joe Wilfried Tsonga, who incidentally has been a really good news story this week, he pushed Nadal for a while, didn't he, last night? And it's a shame, really, that Nadal's pulled up lame with this abdominal injury today. But it's nice to see Tsonga able to play again and play well. But then Shapovalov absolutely thrashed Gael Monfils. And, I mean, it was like 2-2, wasn't it? And Monfils had to win that match to qualify for the ATP Finals, which is, you know, it's quite a shocking scoreline on paper.
It was quite a shocking match to watch, particularly for the Parisian crowd, who looked completely shell-shocked about it. You don't think of Gael Monfils as somebody who gets nervous, but he must have been. Nerves must have played a part in that. And I don't think nerves, not just out of desire to reach the semi-finals, but of course it was a straight shootout at that point for a place in the ATP Finals. Win that match and you're in. Lose it and you're out. So Berrettini is in. I don't think Monfils is a very goal-orientated person. I don't think he deals well with putting the focus on results.
No.
He's about the journey, not the destination. He needs to step onto a tennis court and think. Do you remember when Kyrgios, it was that match at the US Open, possibly the first round. Was it the match against Steve Johnson? In the first round, when he came out and said, it's 11 p.m, he was asked from a walk-on interview, you know, what's your plan here? And he just said, it's 11 p.m. in New York, my plan's to put on a show. Well, that is how Monfils approaches every tennis match, right? I don't think he walks out thinking, it's whatever time it is, I'm going to just knuckle down and try and win this tennis match. So the fact that yesterday must have been more about the result for him than he's used to. He didn't respond to that well at all. He's a journey guy, not a destination guy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. And actually, if you think a couple of rounds later, we had Kyrgios losing to Andre Rublev when the draw was opening up, and he couldn't deliver either. You know, when it was really...
We don't need to relive that.
No, okay.
But hey, Shapovalov was awesome.
He was awesome. And now...
Really awesome.
We've had an email from Ryan Caldero, who likes the show, but he does think we're too hard on some of the next gen, including Shapovalov.
Well, he's withdrawn for the next gen finals, so is he next gen?
I think it's good decision overall. Unless he's going to go there and win it, like Tsitsipas did last year. I mean, what do you think? Should he have gone on and just tried to win it?
I don't think should. I'd have liked to see him do that. But I think I'm perhaps clouded. My view of it is clouded by the fact that I think I'm just still annoyed about the fact that he withdrew last year. I think he should have played last year. Yeah. I think last year he had got ahead of himself, thought he was above the next gen finals. I know there was a lot of pressure on him to play. They really wanted him to play last year. And he ended up kind of, you know, we talked about it at the time, didn't we, that Tsitsipas, Dumanor, particularly Tsitsipas, obviously, it was a milestone to tick off, wasn't it? You rock up there, you're expected to win, you win it. That's that box checked. Then you move on, exactly what he's done this year, qualified for ATP finals. Well, I'm sure that was Shapovalov's plan last year. I'm sure he was thinking, well, this time next year, I'm going to be at the O2. So my sights are already set beyond Milan. So in isolation, I don't have any issue with him withdrawing this year. But in light of the fact that he didn't play last year, maybe it would have been a nice nod to that event. I don't know. I have formulated the hypothesis, the view that a player should only be able to qualify for the next gen finals once.
Yeah, I quite like that. I quite like that. And it's a good way of introducing new players, isn't it? The ATP next gen finals. But anyway, he's not playing. But he is playing tomorrow against Novak Djokovic. Now, it's always been pretty one-sided between those two. Did you speak to Daniela Hantikova and Greg Rusedski? Has anybody got a view that maybe this could be different at all?
I've got a view that maybe it could be different.
Go on. Usually you're quite dismissive of Shapovalov against Djokovic, aren't you?
He's reeled me in again.
Go on, hit me with it then.
Well, if he plays like he did yesterday, he has a chance. Unquestionably. It's a huge if, and Djokovic is the heavy favourite. And he's done such a good job in their previous meetings of exposing that backhand side, the big swings he takes on the backhand side. But Shapovalov can take the ball out of the racket out of Djokovic's hands, can't he, at his best? He can just wrestle control of a match and why are you making that face at me?
Because can he do that more than Dimitrov did?
Yes, I do think he can.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I sort of think he can
and,
as look, well.
Dimitrov was 2 points away from winning a set and maybe more today.
I think if Shapovalov came out and really played lights out tennis, I think you're right. I think he could certainly win a set and for a while dominate. Even Djokovic, he could dominate just because he does have the most extraordinary power off both sides. And he does seem to be putting patterns of play on top of that as well. He's got quite a big mental issue here against Djokovic, hasn't he? Because that's a number of losses where he really hasn't shown up in a row. So the absolute bare minimum that you want to see is a grown-up performance.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Look, if this were a Grand Slam match, I wouldn't even be countenancing, but I wouldn't be giving Shapovalov much chance because I do think he still has to push pretty close to his limit and his capabilities to challenge Djokovic. And I just don't think that is sustainable for 3 out of 5 sets. Best of three, I give him a chance. A chance.
Okay.
A little chance.
Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see. And we'll be back with another tennis podcast tomorrow to find out what we've thought about it all and the WTA final as well. And Matt will be back head in hands after Fulham's humbling at the hands of Hull.
Hey, it's a good day for football.
Right. Yes, Catherine's Reading have finally got a win today. I've seen...
What do you mean, finally?
Well, it's true, isn't it?
7 points from 9. What are you on about?
Is it? Okay. 10 points from what?
7 points from
7 9. 7 points from 9. Okay. Well, that's not too bad. I've seen an episode and a half of Succession now, and I've figured out that you don't have to put a DVD in order to watch it.
Mark's that a 10?
Solid 8. No, it's. I mean, look, I've fallen asleep both times I've tried to watch it so far, but that's nothing to do with the quality of the show. It's clearly very, very good, and I'm very much enjoying it.
We remain friends.
Yeah, it's no Boston Legal, but, you know, it's pretty good. So that's the tennis podcast for another day. We'll be back with another one tomorrow, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by TennisBalls.com with our mascot, Rio, with a Y. Leave us a review on iTunes if you haven't already. Sign up to the newsletter by scanning down on your phone and just clicking subscribe on there. You'll get it for free once a week and daily during the slams. And we're going to be daily at the Fed Cup final. We're going to be daily at the ATP finals. We're going to be daily during the Davis Cup finals. Crikey, I'm worn out just thinking about it. But that's what's going to happen. And I hope you enjoy listening to them. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.